See, apparently we could have had Furyk on, but they let Danielle come on.
Yeah.
That was very nice.
I like Danielle better.
I like them all, but it was nice that Danielle was on.
I was just kidding.
I know. We have fun with all of them.
Yeah, they're all good people.
You know, we also we haven't had on our show is what depends on whether it's good or bad is Dr. Joe or Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Joe Sobel, who's also a big wig at AccuWeather, I understand.
Yeah, he and Elliot are the big kahunas.
Kind of founded it.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think Elliot was the first employee that Dr. Joe Sobel hired.
Wow. Very nice.
Yeah.
This is the trifecta. It's not the AccuWeather Appreciation Hour, but we could. I mean, it's, you know, we like those guys. They're nice. It is the trifecta. 590 WKZL, Roger, Jim, on a Tuesday. Roger, of course, will do handsprings tomorrow because he doesn't have to come to work on Thursday.
Oh, yeah. No, so tomorrow I'll be my usual surly self.
Mm-hmm.
But
surly.
Thursday.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'll be in a good mood.
Yes, you will. Because you won't be here.
True.
Which is too bad, because it'd be nice if you shared your good mood with us sometimes.
Oh, I'm always in a good mood.
So we were discussing the death penalty earlier off the air, you know? The fact that I'm in favor of it in certain circumstances, and we kind of were making a list. Can I add some to the list?
Sure.
Okay. Teenagers who are bored and kill people, a.k.a. those three morons down in Oklahoma.
Okay.
Yeah, now. Just drag them out now. I'm sorry.
I think we need to explain.
Oh, okay.
We were talking about, are there offenses that justify capital punishment?
And now. And we came up with animal abusers, those who abuse children,
mm-hmm.
resulting in death. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Those who kill a public safety employee, whether it be a policeman, public safety officer, fire, mm-hmm. ambulance, in the line of duty. And I think we need to add to the list the teenagers who are bored and decide they're going to go out and shoot somebody.
Now, I think there's a mental illness problem in those teenagers.
No, just take them out. Take them out.
Sorry. I'm not really a big fan of capital punishment, because if you screw up, there's no way to fix the problem.
Well, these guys admitted to it. So take them out.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I guess that's your
No, I'm take serious. On I, you know, I know there's always that chance, but you know what? It hasn't happened that often.
So what's a few unwarranted execution among friends?
Huh? What's the plus or minus factor on that?
Yeah.
We should ask a statistician.
I think it would depend on if you're the...
The one person on the receiving end of the hanging news.
Uh-huh.
Or yeah, I think that does probably pay a
And I think that life in prison is actually a more... is more punishment than killing somebody.
Then can we add something to it?
Like,
seriously? Well, that either at 6 o'clock every night they either get punched in the mouth or kicked in the groin.
I guess
every night.
I guess.
And their cell is made up so that big poster pictures that cannot be removed of the person that they killed are put up on the walls so that they have to look at them all the time and see what they did.
I was thinking of making them Big Bubba's love toy.
Well, that may happen too.
Oh.
That's kind of an indirect. And I don't know if we want to go into.
But I think life without parole is, in some levels, a harsher penalty than a humane execution.
In this case, I'm in that eye for an eye mood, but that's okay. I could be convinced otherwise.
Well,
but I'm just saying, because of the discussion we were having, that I thought those three clowns, tools, whatever, excuses, poor excuses for human beings,
should be
added to the list.
The other issue I have with capital punishment is. It isn't done equally, and if you are on trial with a public defender, you're a lot more likely to get executed than if you are a...
I have a high-powered attorney.
Yeah, if you were, say, a pro football star who had millions of dollars to
and
put...
an incredible all-star defense team.
Yeah. And so the death penalty is not distributed fairly. And the other problem I have with it is that it's not cost effective. It is far, far, far less expensive to put somebody in a maximum security prison forever than it is to go through all the hoops and hurdles that are in the way of an execution. Mm. And I don't know that the country can afford as many executions as would be necessary if it were done in a fair way.
So you're telling me that if Texas executed less of their population in the prisons down there,
they might be able to take care of the roads. Yeah.
I thought we might be able to make that connection.
If Rick Perry wasn't so quick on that switch.
Well, you know, his predecessor was pretty good, too.
Yeah. But Rick Perry has been responsible for more executions than any other governor ever.
I believe Ron White said it best. He goes, most states are getting rid of the death penalty. Mine's putting in an express lane.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to...
On gravel roads.
On gravel... Thank you, Rick. Hang on. We got to cue the band. There you go. Okay. All right, so same-sex marriage, and we've talked about how divisive a topic this is, and how it's basically, I think it's like 1 and 1A between abortion and same-sex marriage as to how it riles up the population. Okay?
It does nowadays.
Well, yeah.
It, for a lot of people, it doesn't nowadays.
There's a subset of people who are all excited about it. We're going to talk about that.
I think it goes away over time.
And that's exactly the gist of this article that was written by Susan Demas. So, by the way, if you recognize her, she's part of the Michigan Truth Squad when the political stuff rolls around and we have elections coming up. Susan Demas is a member of the Michigan Truth Squad. And they go out and they ferret out in advertising and statements and speeches and whatnot what is fact and what is they call foul on. Her column, because she was talking with her 10-year-old daughter, her column basically stipulated that at some point in time, the topic of same-sex marriage is going to be a blasé topic because it's going to be uneventful. It's not going to polarize people. It's not going to be as controversial as it used to be. And it basically at some point in time, it's just going to become a regular issue, just sits around and does nothing. That it's because it's for the most part, it's going to become, if not socially acceptable, socially tolerated. So Roger and I were talking off the air. And one of the things we did mention was the fact that there is a good number of people out there who probably do not care one way or another because it doesn't directly affect their lives, so to speak. They are not homosexual. They're straight or they are. And the acceptance level or toleration level is there. They don't care. It's not that they don't care, but they don't care. It does not rile up feelings of revulsion or of strong strong approval and things like that. And you're always going to have the two ends of the spectrum. But I think Roger's right. I think there's a good majority of the people in the middle that are going, we don't care.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that we don't care, but we don't care. It doesn't matter to us. Now, that leads to...
I don't see where it's the government's business to be regulating this.
That seems to be the next step.
And
but,
I don't care what a church does. If they choose to not marry and not recognize a gay marriage, mm-hmm. that's within their right. Mm-hmm. I'm comfortable with that. They don't have to perform gay marriages in their church.
Now, the question is, though, is that a bigoted point of view? No. You got to be really careful where you tread here, okay? If a religion or a faith believes that, and I'm going to use the word that a lot of them use, abomination, including our friends over in Kansas who have a tendency to use that word, too.
Well, that church you can't mention.
Yeah, I can't mention them. That within the structure of their faith and their church, if they believe that it's wrong, then it's fine for them to believe that it's wrong without people who think that it's cool or it should happen pointing your fingers at them and saying that they're bigots. They're not bigots. They're operating inside their faith and their belief system. And that's just the way it is. I think what happens is...
I can think they're bigots.
Well, you can, but I think that's a misguided...
I think they have a right to do what they want to do within the confines of their church, and I'll fight for their right to be bigots.
I think that's too strong a word.
When you discriminate based on gender identity,
I don't,
that makes you a bigot.
If
you discriminate by color of skin, you're a bigot.
See, I have a hard time with that word.
Why?
Well, because bigotry and racism are slapped around so much that I don't know if they've lost their luster or what. I guess if you keep it within the confines... If you don't make it public, for instance, and you don't get in somebody's face over it, or you project that opinion in a calm, cool, collected manner, then I think it's plurality. And let me explain why. Because any other form of disagreement along the line of politics or, you know, things like that falls under the umbrella of plurality. In other words, there's more than one way to look at this. Now, you may not think my way is the right way, and I may not think your way is the right way, but the fact that we are willing to tolerate each other's belief systems in that we have the right to believe that, that's plurality. When it goes public, a.k.a. the KKK, okay, that's bigotry. And it goes even a little further than that, because bigotry is I think, something that just is a, could be a verbal or a written, you know. So if somebody publishes an article... Say, for instance, Raj, somebody publishes an article from a specific religion and slaps around every other religion because of their belief system and says that they're stupid and says that they're wrong and says that they're all going to burn in hell and that crossed the line. That's bigotry. Okay?
Okay.
But if somebody writes an article from a faith, and I'm not going to pick one because I don't want to single anybody out, and they say, you know, this is why we believe in what we believe in now. America was built on plurality. And if people want this, we can tolerate it. We don't have to like it. And we don't have to authorize it because our faith doesn't do that. But based on the fact that God gave us free will and a whole bunch of other things, we're not going to hold gay marriages in our church. But if another faith wants to do it, then more power to them. See, that's plurality. You're admitting the fact that you don't believe in it, but you're willing to accept somebody else's belief system in that they have the right to believe that. That doesn't cross the bigotry line.
This is exactly why the founding fathers designed a separation of church and state. Why the founding fathers did not want the establishment of a religion in this country, to allow that pluralistic society you're talking about. I don't have to agree with somebody to defend their right to their perspective.
No, I'm agreeing with you 100%. That's true. And that's what I like about plurality.
You call it pluralistic. I call it bigotry. Mm. But you have a right to be narrow-minded. As long as your narrow-mindedness doesn't interfere with other people's pursuit of happiness.
And that's where I agree with you, and I think when the interference starts, that's where bigotry starts.
Okay.
Okay? I think anything up and before that is plurality. I have friends, I have relatives that I disagree over with several things, and a lot of them are faith-based. All right? That doesn't mean that I don't love them any less. or I don't care for them any less. It just means we disagree. And it may pain me or pain them. But I think that the part when bigotry kicks in is when it crosses over and you start trying to tell somebody that your faith system is better than their faith or your belief system is better than their belief system, and that's wrong. Now, as far as getting government out of things, that's going to be a real tough thing because of the simple fact that we've had the system set up that it doesn't matter what church you get married in, you still have to file your marriage license at the Secretary of State's office. Now, if that were to change... A marriage license is not unlike any other license, like a birth certificate or a divorce decree or whatever. It's a civil form. If the marriage license is considered a civil, and I know I'm going to get emails on this one. If the marriage license at a Secretary of State's office is considered to be a civil form, then there should be no problem in allowing same-sex marriages. Period. And that decision should be made from the Secretary of State or the governor or whoever. You know, the thing is that there are, you know, voters in the state of Michigan said, no, we don't want same-sex marriage. And I'm not trying to take the power away from the voters of the state of Michigan, but I really, in my heart, I truly believe if you're going to correct this system, this has got to be a governmental decision that's made on the basis of redirecting the civil part of this and saying, if this is a civil action, you take a marriage license and you file it with the Secretary of State's office or your local county clerk's office because that is a civil action, then there's really no justification for not allowing same-sex marriages. Mm-hmm. Not at all. But I'm just saying, I'm not so sure I want to let the people of the state of Michigan decide. I think maybe this ought to be just a governmental decision. Maybe
rights are not something that are voted on. They're something that you receive.
Then I believe that maybe the state legislature has got to take this and run with it and can change it so that those churches who want to perform same-sex marriages because that's part of their faith and belief system can do so. Those who don't want to, they don't have to.
I had an interesting conversation with a listener.
Really?
Off the air about this topic.
And can we like share it next?
Yeah, right after a break.
Cool. We can do that. We can. It is the Trifecta 590 WKZO. This is the Trifecta. So, Roger, you said you got a phone call off the air?
Yeah, we have a guy who said he doesn't agree with me on much of anything, but his perspective on churches is that the separation of church and state was designed to keep the government from instituting a religion,
yes,
but not for religious people using their religious conviction to steer the government.
Hmm.
And I disagreed with him on that, pointing out that most of the founding fathers were not Christians, they were deists, and they were, in my mind, reacting to the religious discrimination that drove most of the earliest European settlers to the United States. The Dutch community we have here in West Michigan came here because of religious discrimination in the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the first sects that came to this country did so running away from
religious persecution.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what the founding fathers had in mind, not turning this into a Christian version of the Taliban, but to separate church and state and let people have their religious ideas totally on their own with absolutely no governmental interference at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't to allow the majority of a religion in the country to guide the country. It was meant to make sure that religion did not start guiding the country. to allow people to practice their religion as they see fit, with no government interference, even if you're a small little group, versus the majority Christian in this country.
What if your religion or your faith believes that it is your quest or your mission to I don't want to say impose, because that's a bad word, but to try to convince everyone else that they're wrong and you're right?
Oh, I think that you have the right to go out and try to recruit people for your perspective, but you can't do it using the power of the government.
Okay.
You have to come, Jim, and talk to Roger, mm-hmm. and convince me that your religious perspective
is
right and appropriate for
and
me.
And that if you decide that that's not right and appropriate for you, that instead of throwing a temper tantrum or saying, well, you're going to rot and burn in hell, that you gracefully extract yourself from that and say, well, we're going to have to part and disagree to disagree, but God bless you, and then you're off.
When I get people with a particular religious perspective that come to my house, I invite them in and talk about my Buddhist leanings, and God has many faces, and their God and my God are the same God, and come on in, let me share my mm-hmm. God with you. And they generally choose not to come in.
Well,
I don't know why.
I guess, in closing, I agree with Susan Demas. I think that you look 20 years down the line, and we're all going to look back and go, what was all the hoo-ha about? But, you know, and that's her point. She just believes that in time, it's all going to die down, and it's just going to become part of society.
If the government wrote a law that said churches have to marry gay people,
that would be wrong.
I would be there protesting that a church has the right to do that if they want.
Or in to the say confines, no if they want.
In the confines of their church.
That's right.
It's they can't take that on the road. They keep those thoughts in their church.
Mm-hmm.
And they can go out and evangelize. Is that the word?
Yeah.
They can go out and do that and try to convert people to their church,
mm-hmm.
But you can't use the power of the government to do that.
It. Yep, that's a no-no. That I will agree with you on 100%. Yes, indeed. Indeed.
But had an interesting conversation.
Yeah, it looked like it over there.
Yeah.
Medicaid expansion, my friend. There are six things that I bet maybe you didn't know, or that maybe you should know. Or that you will know after the break.
You're going to tell us?
Yes.
Ooh, you're a good guy.
Well, I try. CBS and local news coming up. It is the Trifecta, 590 WKZO. It is the Trifecta. Roger and me, Jim.
That sounds like a movie.
Yeah, it kind of does, doesn't it?
Yeah, be a good movie.
Yeah. Michigan Department of Community Health Director Jim Haverman.
Yes?
Haverman. Is it Haverman? I think it's Haverman. Is a strong supporter of the legislation that is around now, the major one that would reform the Medicaid program in Michigan and the expand it, you know, to include those, what did we say, up around 40?
A little under a half million.
About 470,000 new residents by 2020. That's what it would be.
Yeah, little under a half million.
So
fellow Michiganders would be insured.
Next year, the Healthy Michigan Plan, as it's called, would cover an estimated 320,000 additional residents. So there's a little under that, but overall it's going to be close to about a half a million by the 2020 run.
Mm-hmm.
And that is good. That is a good thing. It is. However, as you know, we've talked about, the governor's in favor of this plan, but Senator Randy Richardville wanted to make sure that the votes were there. So he sent everybody home. And so talking about votes in an interview earlier this week, Mr. Haverman, I think it's Haverman. I'm sorry, it's Haverman. Stipulated, there are six things, Roger. Six. Count them. Six. things that you may not know about the Medicaid expansion issue.
Number one.
Number one being the vote. There is a chance that next week the vote will be taken. The 20 votes will be there. That will affirm the action from the work group, which updated the bill, and then also the action of the House. Then they'll send it back to the House for concurrence. Then it will go to the governor's desk.
That could happen?
That could happen.
Oh, well, that's number one. Number two.
As he said, quote, this is a very Michigan-centric program. You're going to have premiums and copays no matter what. For instance, for those people who make between 100 and 133% of poverty, the premium could be 2%, copays of 3%, so it's 5% of income that will go to this. For those under 100%, there's no premium, but there is a copay. And after 4 years, they'll have a choice. They can stay on the Medicaid program, but the premiums and copays will go to like 7.5%, or they go to the exchange where they wouldn't pay more than 9%. Everybody's going to pay, whether you like it or not. But in the case of those below the poverty line, they will not pay the premiums. They'll just pay the copay.
And the logic behind making people who are so poor, they qualify for the SNAP program, and we think there's blood in that turnip we can extract to subsidize this. Is that the logic behind?
I don't know
why
what the logic
people
is.
Who are making less than poverty level are expected to what?
Well,
rob their local 7-Eleven to come up with the money to pay for the insurance.
I'm not so sure that they don't have copays now. In some circumstances, but you know, here's the thing.
Well, the half million people who have no insurance, they don't have any copays.
No, they go to the emergency room and
get it for free.
I don't know. That is a good question. But
I misstated that. It's not free. They go to the emergency room, and the rest of us pay for them.
We will. I think as this shakes out, there's going to be the possibility that there will be some help maybe available for those who are below the poverty line. I can't imagine there wouldn't be, but I don't know. I can't speak to that because I honestly don't know.
I caused you to digress.
Well, anyway.
Number three,
I bet you didn't know that Michigan is held up as a model of Medicaid efficiency in the country. Our program, for administrative costs, less than 1%, and they're capped in the new bill. Even though they're adding 320,000 people, they can't expand over 1% of administrative costs. So they have to keep their costs low. Did you know that we were a model program?
No.
We are a model program. Not bad, huh?
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Good for us. That's cool. There are challenges in the bill to lower uncompensated costs in hospitals that will save taxpayers money, a.k.a. somebody going to the emergency room not having health insurance.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what's going to happen. Here's one that I think we got to hammer home a little bit. And see, it says even if Obamacare dies, I can't see that happening. We had this discussion yesterday. It's not going to die. There are too many roadblocks in the way.
Republicans have tried 40 times.
I know, and they'll try 41, and, you know.
And that'll fail, too.
You know, that's why WD-40 is called WD-40. You know that, don't you?
Yeah.
Water dispersant 40, formula 40, because they tried 39 times before and couldn't get it, and then they tried on the 40th try. They kept trying. Yeah, they may keep trying. However, as the bill gets, as this law moves on, there is a possibility that there could be shakeup. There always happens. Where there are possibilities of taking things out, putting things in, once the shakedown cruise starts, you do find things okay. But as far as getting rid of it completely, ain't gonna happen. I got news for you, Republicans. It's not gonna happen.
There's a rule of thumb in some people who buy cars to never buy a new car in the first year of its production, because there are, in software, we call it undocumented features. There's bugs in these things. And every major program we have ever done, be it in the military for a weapon system. Mm-hmm. There have been unexpected results that where the program had to be adapted.
Yes.
And that happened in Social Security. It happened in Medicare. It happened in the Medicare Part D, where we started helping seniors with their prescriptions. There were things that we encountered that were unanticipated. Mm-hmm. And you have to go back and tweak these programs. Reduce some things, eliminate some things, add some things in. Experience helps you do things better if you're intelligent.
Now,
you learn along the way.
Did you know the reforms will live on? Even if the program stops. Now, here's the thing. The example he used was, that Mr. Haben used, was after 3 years, say the state lawmakers don't want to fund the program, they don't want the program anymore. That's $600 million over the next 3 years, but if Michigan decides they don't want to continue the program because it's not working, we don't have to pay the money back.
Right.
That is federal government money that we get that we do not have to pay back. So it is a good investment for Michigan.
Well, and see, that's part of the panic in the Republicans.
They think that's going to happen.
They're afraid that people are that it's going to work. And people will discover the benefits, that it's really going to reduce costs, begin to reduce costs of health care in this country. Mm-hmm. And the Republicans don't want to take a chance that people will try it and like it. And so that's why they're stalling, why they're, you know, going back to Sarah Palin talking about the death panels. They have pulled out every trick in the book to try to keep people from becoming insured.
Now, I don't know if you knew this or not. This plan is going to require some waivers. One of those waivers that's in place, and this can only... We'll get the first waiver for premiums and copays, probably from the federal government. They're keeping an eye on what's going on. The second waiver is about the 48 months that people have to stay on Medicaid or go with the exchange. They want to waive that too, but they'll have the information they need that the government's going to require. And according to Mr. Haveman, he believes that Michigan will get the waiver for that for 2015. So that may be the answer to your, are people below the poverty line going to have to pay copays?
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Okay.
Finally, the state could wait and implement this after January 1st. 100% of the money is available, and he says that it would make sense to do it now as opposed to later. If we don't do it until January 1st, there we're still going to have those people going to the emergency rooms. We're going to still have those people going, you know, that aren't going to get help, that really need to get help. So the implementation needs to be made now. However, the state could wait until January 1st if they had to.
Yeah.
So,
I
like what he had to say. I really do. I think it's very thoughtful. It's not really provocative at all, but it gives a pretty good reference. And I like the fact that he says, look, if this doesn't work after we go through it for a few years, then we can leave and it's not going to cost us a cent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good.
Well, and, going back to the last item on the list, to see the benefits in reducing the cost of health insurance. My health insurance is through my wife and her job. Yours is through
the VA.
Yeah,
I get it through the VA.
And all of those insurance policies will go down in price once you're not paying for the people who are getting free treatment in the emergency rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you stall it, and this is one of the reasons I believe Republicans are doing this, is to keep insurance rates from going down. And so they can point at that as a failure of Obamacare.
Yeah, but it really is a failure of
Implementation,
and that's being blocked right now.
But our insurance rates, those of us who are insured in Michigan, won't go down until we insure that 500,000 people who are freeloading in the hospitals.
All right, we'll be back to wrap things up for this Tuesday. It is the Trifecta, 590 WKZO. 590 WKZO, getting ready to wrap up this edition of the Trifecta. Did you see the latest tourism commercials on some of the cable channels?
Nuh-uh.
The Czech Republic?
No.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Oh.
So.
Look like a place you want to go?
Not really.
Oh.
No, I'm stuck on Pierre, Michigan.
Ah.
So, by the way, I saw an advertisement on my way back to Chicago. I saw a billboard for a company, an insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
That had the Pierre, Michigan logo on it.
Really? What?
Yeah. Oh. It was some insurance company. I don't know. So.
Pure Michigan Insurance.
Yeah, apparently.
We'll insure your good time when you come here and
spend money
on vacation.
There you go. Just make sure you come here and spend money.
Yeah.
Tigers tonight, 6:40 to begin a three-game set with the Minnesota Twins. 6:40 again airtime on 590 WKZO. Interesting article on over the internet on the memo to pitchers in the American League. Walk Miguel Cabrera. I don't think that's a real good idea. First of all, I know, but Prince Fielder's behind him, and Fielder's going to start heating up here pretty quick. So, you know, it's like, choose your poison. Okay, yeah, we'll walk Cabrera, and then Fielder hit the ball out of the yard. So, you know. And Ryan Dempster, by the way, Boston Red Sox, threw three times at Alex Rodriguez before he finally hit him.
Oh.
Got a five-game suspension. I'm ready to send him a card with some money in it.
What place
He's
are the
hero.
Tigers in?
They're first.
By how many games?
6.5 games, I believe.
Oh, that's not bad.
So go Tigers. Tonight, 6:40 airtime, 590 WKZO. Roger and I are back, same bat time, same bat channel. 5 o'clock afternoon news is next.
See you then.
On 590 WKZO. Go. Let's go.
Kalamazoo's news, weather, and traffic station is 590 WKZO. Kalamazoo.